The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The UCD Arts and Humanities Annual College Lecture will be given by journalist and author Lara Marlowe. It's happening on Wednesday at 6:30. The venue is the Trapdoor Theatre in the basement of the Newman Building in Belfield. Now, the event is almost sold out, but there are still some tickets available. If you check it up on Eventbrite, you may just be lucky. But Lara Marlowe is with me now. Lara, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
The title of your talk and the ambition of your talk is to explain Ukraine's ambition to be part of the West.
Exactly, because I believe that that is the core reason for the war in Ukraine now. Ukraine has been trying to pull itself away from first the Soviet Union and then Russia for hundreds of years. And Putin is determined to keep Ukraine in his orbit.
Bring us back to the history of Ukraine, to beyond that 300-year threshold, and how that part of Europe evolved.
Well, it was founded in the 9th century by Vikings from what is now Sweden. And in the 11th century, Yaroslav the Wise, the Prince of Kiev, had a fabulous medieval dynasty, which was more opulent than anything in Western Europe. And he married off three of his daughters to European kings. And that was overrun by the Mongol hordes, which also overran Muscovy and divided Europe into the continent into Asia and Europe. And the Russians were much more influenced by the Mongols, by the Mongol horde, and especially the western part of Ukraine stayed very close to Europe. So there's sort of different traditions. And then in the early 18th century, Peter the First, Peter the Great to Russians, declared that that Muscovy would be called Russia after the Kievan Rus, after the medieval dynasty. And he bases his historical claim, which is bogus, of course, to that lineage, which was not direct, as Putin says it is. And then in the 19th century, you had really strong Ukrainian nationalism. The Russian Tsar, Alexander II, banned the use of the Ukrainian language. There was a brief period at the time of the Bolshevik Revolution when the Ukrainians had an independent state. Lenin said that they could, when the Soviet Union was established, said that they could use their own language. So there's this huge flowering of the arts, which Stalin quashed. They call it the executed Renaissance. And at the same time, there was the Holodomor, the famine, which killed at least 3.5 million Ukrainians. And Stalin had most of the artists and writers executed, shot in the head. And then, you know, it just goes on and on. During the Second World War, millions of Ukrainians died. Afterwards, a lot of them were deported to Siberia. So when Putin says we are one people, Russians and Ukrainians, the Ukrainians remember all this and they think we don't want to be one people with Russia. We want to get away from them.
Now, that collectivization which gave rise to the famine, and we know that Ukraine was the breadbasket, not just for that part of the world, but for elsewhere, a great exporter of grain. There was collectivization in Russia as well. Many people must have died under Stalin within the boundaries of what is now modern Russia.
They did, but the largest number of fatalities were in Ukraine. In Kharkiv, in the eastern city, peasants were dying in the streets. There are black and white archive photos of dead bodies in the streets. It was really, really shocking. And Stalin knew this was happening, and it was deliberate.
Do they regard their great famine as we regard ours?
Very much so. It's a fundament of their identity. There are famine memorials. Since independence, they commemorate the Holodomor. There's a national day of commemoration. And yes, I mean, when I was driving to Ukraine in a minivan with some construction workers in just 3 days after the full-scale invasion, that was the first time I'd heard about it. And one of these construction workers started telling me how they starved us. And it is every Ukrainian knows the story and remembers it.
Now, we know that Putin has ambitions to recreate the Soviet Union, in effect, to perhaps embrace all of those Eastern European countries, even those which are now part of the EU. Where does that ambition on Putin's part come from?
For one thing, he thinks that he's the reincarnation of Tsar Peter I. He sees the world in terms of empires. He sees the European Union as an empire, and he thinks it stole the Russian Empire. And he had this empire. He wants it back. In December of 2021, just 2 months before the full-scale invasion, he sent a letter to Joe Biden saying he was demanding, this was to avoid war, he was demanding that the borders of NATO be rolled back to their 1997 borders, which means he wants all of the countries from Central and Eastern Europe who've joined NATO to have to leave NATO. He wants the Soviet
But that's
space.
Totally unrealistic demand. It was never going to happen. So is this demonstrative of the Russian tactic of asking for far more than they ever expect to get?
Yeah, I think that somewhere he may expect to get it, because remember, he has more than one method in his toolkit. He doesn't have to invade militarily necessarily. He already has Viktor Orban doing his bidding in Hungary. He has Robert Fico, the Prime Minister of Slovakia, also pro-Russian. He intervened in the elections in Romania, almost got a pro-Russian candidate elected. So he's using hybrid warfare in Georgia very much so. So he's trying to recreate his sphere of influence, and he's actually making a lot of progress. If, for example, Marine Le Pen is not declared ineligible by a French court today, and she becomes president in 2 years of France, that would be a huge boon to Vladimir Putin. He may be going for all of Europe, Western Europe included.
Is this one man's vision, or is there a collective behind Putin who share his vision?
There is a collective behind him. One of the chief ideologues of the regime is a man called Alexander Dugin. You may remember that his daughter was assassinated, probably by the Ukrainians. And he has this concept of what they call the Ruski Mir, the Russian world. Putin has refused to recognize borders for Russia because the Russian world, in his mind, is anywhere where people speak Russian. And, for example, he's used the specious argument that Ukrainians speak Russian, especially in the East and the South, as justification for the full-scale invasion. This, by the way, was the same justification that Hitler used for threatening the Sudetenland and for then later taking all of Czechoslovakia. He thought that anywhere there were German speakers was Germany. And Putin is basically saying anywhere where there are Russian speakers is Russia.
So basically, the United Kingdom should take back America.
Yeah, and Ireland.
On that basis, and Ireland, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, nonsense kind of talk. But if that's what they believe, that's what they believe. Now, the question then, on the one side, we know what Putin's ambitions are, and he would like to, and he tried to in the early days of the major invasion, get rid of Zelensky and replace Zelensky with some puppet at the top. But what are the American ambitions? Or are they in any way clear?
Well, maybe we should distinguish between American ambitions and Donald Trump's ambitions.
Are they not one and the same these days?
I don't think so, because opinion polls show that 84% of Americans dislike Vladimir Putin. But Donald Trump, since February 12th at least, and actually long before that, is very, very much in lockstep with Putin. I mean, the one exception was yesterday. He told NBC television in the US that he was very pissed off with Vladimir Putin, that he was very angry. I don't really believe this. I think it's theatrics. He'd said once before that Putin was dragging his feet in the peace negotiations. But the fact is that so far, Trump has given Putin everything he's wanted. He said Ukraine can never join NATO. He says that he will not send U.S. troops to Ukraine to guarantee any settlement. And he's also said that Ukraine is going to have to give up this 20% of its territory, which Russia already occupies. Now, he said all this before the negotiations even got underway. So how can you believe that Trump is an honest broker? He's obviously not. And by the way, after he said he was angry and pissed off, he kind of backed down on it. And he said he'd heard that Zelensky was backing out of an agreement to give the U.S. half of all its mineral resources, and that if he did that, there would be big, big problems. And he also said that when he's angry with Putin, he said the anger dissipates very quickly.
The question of what Trump is demanding of Ukraine seems unconscionable. But then you point out in your talk, because I've read the text of your talk, that Britain was only paying back war reparations to the United States as recently as 2006, is it?
I'm not very up to speed on British war reparations.
You know, that they all the help they got in defeating the Nazis.
Right.
That America wanted to be paid for them and was being paid off well into the 21st century.
Yes, but I think the $66 billion worth of weapons which the U.S. has given to Ukraine over the last 3 years, it was a gift. It wasn't supposed to be a loan. Also, I mean, Trump has given billions of dollars worth of weapons to Israel so it could destroy Gaza. I don't see him asking Israel to pay back the weapons that they've got. And also, he's asking for half a trillion dollars worth of minerals, $500 billion worth of minerals.
Well in excess of even the erroneous sums that he claims. That
exactly.
Now, Trump, as you discussed this in your lecture, Trump as a potential Russian asset, how might that be true and how would it have happened?
My intuition is that it is true. Whether he's an asset or an agent is another question. In 1987, he was married to a Czech model, Ivana, and the Czechoslovakia then was still part of the Soviet bloc, and she was being watched by Czech agents in New York, so they were also watching Trump. He got to be very chummy with Yuri Dobrynin, who was a Soviet ambassador to the UN and later to Washington. The Soviets invited him to Moscow and St. Petersburg in 1987. And when he came back to the US, he suddenly bought newspaper pages criticizing NATO, and he announced that he had political ambitions. One former KGB agent in Washington called Yuri Shevets said that they drank champagne in the KGB bureau in Washington when this happened. Shevets and another former KGB agent called Alnur Musayev have both said that Trump was recruited during that trip to the Soviet Union. He certainly acted as if he was. And then quite soon afterwards, when Trump's business dealings started falling apart, he had six bankruptcies in the 90s and early 2000s. The Russians bailed him out, basically. They invested, we know for sure, at least $100 million in Trump properties, probably a lot more. Trump's sons actually boasted that they had all the money they wanted from Russia. Now, we know that money is the way to Donald Trump's heart. Did the Russians buy him? I think at the very least, he's extremely grateful to Russia for saving his corrupt business career.
And the question of any compromat they might have on him, video that might be compromising, whether taken in Moscow or taken in elsewhere.
There have been stories about this. There was the Steele dossier, which was partly discredited. But when you remember Stormy Daniels and that Trump was convicted for paying a prostitute hush money, and he was also convicted of sexually assaulting E. Jean Carroll, I think it would be very hard to embarrass him with sex tapes.
Unless they were underage or whatever. But that's something that may or may not emerge. The question of other people in his cabinet who would be compromised. I mean, you can't imagine that this pro-Putin stance is unique in that cabinet room.
No, certainly Pete Hegseth, his defense secretary, whose greatest achievement until now was to work for Fox News. Hegseth is going along with it totally. Marco Rubio, who as a senator was very critical of Russia and condemned the invasion of Ukraine, is suddenly going along with Trump. I think they're just yes men. And they, I mean, he humiliates his cabinet by forcing them to go along with patent lies. For example, the lie that it's Ukraine's fault that that the war started. That's obvious. Or forcing his followers to say that he actually won the 2020 election, that Biden faked the results.
So do you believe they're just cowardly people?
Yes.
Or are they stupid people? Or is there a mixture of both?
I think they're opportunists. I think that they go where the power goes, and it's very nice being a cabinet member. You get a big salary, you get chauffeur-driven cars, you get a lot of power, you get to bomb Yemen and so on. And I think they're hangers-on. They're gutless. They don't know the difference between right and wrong.
But, you know, the question is, they are, many of them, stupid people.
Yes.
Because they are not informed in any way. But they're so stupid that they don't realize how stupid they are. That's the issue.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, remember the example last week of the talk, the loop on Signal, where Mike Walt, the national security advisor, invited the editor of the Atlantic magazine to join a loop on Signal. And then he was putting all the bombing plans, classified information, on an open telephone line. I mean, this is stupid. It's beyond stupid. It's unprofessional.
But they denied, and Trump doesn't believe. He doesn't know anything about Signal, doesn't know how it works, doesn't know what it is.
Exactly.
And they all lied.
One of my favorite quotes, Pat, recently was a blog by Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize laureate, who said that this administration is both incompetent and evil.
Now, you have a quotation in your lecture, a joke in Kiev, about America being required to help Europe in its battle against Russia. And it's interesting. What is it, about 430 million Europeans?
Yes, there's a sort of upside-down pyramid, if you like. If you look at the numbers, there are 450 million Europeans. They are relying on 340 million Americans to protect them from 140 million Russians who are being held in check by 40 million Ukrainians.
And that's the joke.
That's the joke.
And you wonder, there's such a grain of truth in all of that. But maybe this is what Trump is doing. The Europeans are going to have to muscle up, basically.
Yes. And I think that's the great hope of the Ukrainians. It's obvious that no one can rely on Donald Trump. The Europeans are saying all the right things, but it's still, you know, kind of touch and go.
Now, I'll read the breaking news story. Marine Le Pen has been found guilty of misappropriating European funds to finance her far-right National Rally party in a case which could lead her being barred from standing in the 2027 presidential election. They handed down guilty verdicts to 8 other current or former members of her party who, like her, previously served as elected lawmakers in the European Parliament. She showed no immediate reaction in court.
Well, they're waiting for the verdict. The real clincher will be, will she be declared ineligible for the next presidential election or not? Because the prosecutor asked for her to be declared ineligible for public office for the next 5 years. Now, if that happens, it means she cannot succeed Emmanuel Macron as president, because she is poised to, at this stage anyway, to win the next presidential election. You can be certain that, one, that she would appeal, and two, that her followers in the National Rally will scream blue murder, that this is a violation of democracy, that this was a plot to prevent her becoming president, and so on. So we're all on tenterhooks waiting to see if she will be declared ineligible or not as her punishment for this embezzlement.
So it's still wait and see.
Exactly. We should know today.
All right. Well, Lara, it's a fascinating discussion on Ukraine and why it really wants to be part of the West. They have a Western mindset, certainly in the Western part of Ukraine, whatever about in the Donbass, where there would still be a rump of pro-Russians.
Not that many. Even Donbass voted 84% for independence from Russia. from the Russian Federation in December of 91.
All right. Lara Marlowe, who is giving the UCD Arts and Humanities Annual College Lecture. It's happening at 6:30 on Wednesday evening in the new Trapdoor Theatre in the basement of the Newman Building in Belfield. More details you can get on eventbrite.ie.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.